The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
My guest on the podcast today wanted to get started buying rental properties, but he couldn't get approved for a mortgage. A lot of people would just give up right then, but not my guest. He has a ton of hustle, and he figured out a way to make things work. So on the show today, we're going to go over exactly what he did. We're also going to talk to him about a recent tenant he had that went bad. He screened this tenant. This tenant looked good enough on paper to get approved. They moved in. Everything was going great. And then after about 6 months, something happened. The tenant stopped paying and things kind of fell apart. So I want to talk to him about exactly what happened and see if we can dissect things a little bit and figure out what went wrong to see what we can learn from this to make sure that this doesn't happen to us. So let's take a real quick break. We'll come back in 30 seconds and we'll meet Christian Humanity from Hagerstown, Maryland.
Are you on track to achieve your financial goals? Income producing real estate is the most historically proven way to accumulate wealth and has created more financial freedom than any other means. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best turnkey cash flow rental properties. Our simple proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly income. Get your free strategy session with our knowledgeable investment counselors at noradarealestate.com. That's N-O-R-A-D-A realestate.com.
Hey, Christian, welcome to the podcast. So today you work in real estate full time. Mm-hmm. You're an agent and you also own rental properties, but you didn't start there. What were you doing right before you got into real estate?
Great question, Dan. Yes. And again, thanks for inviting me to the show. I actually was graduate with a computer science degree, and I went to work for the Office of Naval Research in Arlington. I was there as a program analyst for about 9 months. Mm-hmm.
And then you weren't happy there. You just realized that that job wasn't for you.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, graduating, I kind of knew that that wasn't my passion, but I figure I'll finish it and then I'll go to work force and then figure out from there. So after the third month, 6 month, I just decided, look, my potential is drained. I'm only doing enough to not get fired. And I just saw a lot of people in the same boat. I didn't want to end up retiring, not doing what I love or using all or most of my potential. So I did decide right there and then to do sales and particularly real estate sales.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you got your real estate license, you started selling real estate, and then you wanted to start investing, but you couldn't get approved mm-hmm. for a mortgage because banks want to see a 2-year track record when you're self-employed. Mm-hmm. So tell me what happened. Did you go to some banks and get denied? Mm-hmm.
Yes, actually, I did. I went to a bank, multiple banks, and they all told me that I needed 2 years.
Okay.
And, you know, the bank wants to minimize the risk, so they want somebody to prove that they have the ability to pay the mortgage.
Right, okay.
So and I was in a position then that I needed to find a way of acquiring properties with my credit was fair, but with basically not going to the bank directly. And I stumbled upon seller financing.
Okay.
And I learned about it, and I executed on it. And it's a very cool way of acquiring properties without going to the bank. And some use it for as a long-term strategy. I use it as a short-term. Well, at that time, I knew that 2-3 years later, I was going to be able to get pre-approved and then switch to traditional financing. So that's what I did then.
So seller financing, I mean, it's just like it sounds. The seller is the bank. So you would mm-hmm. go to the seller and instead of telling the seller, I'm going to have a mortgage and you're going to get paid off and you're going to walk away mm-hmm. with your cash mm-hmm. at settlement. You're going to basically pay them a mortgage payment every month.
Correct. Now, so they become the bank, like you said, and all the terms are negotiable. And that's the beautiful thing. People can use this strategy, low credit, no credit, you know, low money, a little bit of money for down payment. Everything is negotiable. The key here, Dan, is having trust from the seller. Okay, the seller needs to know that you have done this before and that you will have the ability to pay. the mortgage payments. But obviously, the seller might or might not ask for proof of income, et cetera, et cetera. In most cases, they don't. But it all depends on how you negotiate these terms. But it is a beautiful way in which acquiring properties without the bank.
Now, not every seller, and I would say probably most sellers, aren't a good candidate to approach for seller financing. You're looking for a very specific type of seller. Like, what are you looking for?
Okay, I'm looking for owners that have owned that rental property or single family home or multifamily that they've owned in more than 20 years.
Okay.
Okay.
So you figure in 20 years that they have a lot of equity, maybe it's even paid off, but they're someone that is probably in a position where you could make monthly payments to them. Now, the other benefit to them is when they sell the house, if they have a huge profit in the house and maybe they're an investor, they've owned the property for 20 years, they may have a huge capital gain and they may be able to spread that gain out over a period of time if if you're paying them. So is that something like, do you find that this works best when you're buying properties from investors?
Yes, that's correct. Because investors that, you know, you got to remember, they at one point, if they're actually savvy investors and they built a portfolio, you know that they at one point when they started, they probably used seller financing as well. So they under some, a big majority of them, especially if we're talking multifamily, they have heard or have done seller financing.
And they're also very easy. I think they're also like comfortable with the idea of cash flow. So, I mean, say if I bought a property when I'm 30, and I own it for 30 years and now I'm 60, like I've been getting cash flow off that property for 30 years, I might be open to seller financing.
Right. That's true. So that's what I would do. Yeah, if, you know, for people that are watching, want to get into seller financing, definitely look into people that have owned it for multiple years and that own free and clear.
Now, tell me about your first deal. Like, so how did you find it and how did you approach the sellers?
So this is a duplex, right? I negotiated, I put in about... in this case, 15% down, 4% interest, amortized over 20, and with a 2-year balloon. Remember, okay, so I wanted to buy it and then go to the bank traditional.
So the seller is getting 15%. This is, so like they're walking away with your down payment at closing. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to pay them 4% interest on the remaining balance?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, correct.
And so you're looking at this as a short-term solution because you knew that in 2 years you would be able to get bank financing. So you told the sellers, look, I'm going to make payments to you for 2 years. And then at the end of 2 years, I'm going to get bank financing and you're going to get cashed out.
Exactly. Right?
Now, was it hard to convince them of this or were they open to it?
Well, it wasn't. They were savvy investors. I mean, they've owned property. They have multiple other properties even up to now. And they've done it in the past. I mean, they were more negotiating on the variable. So they already knew and they were okay with the deal.
And then as far as the paperwork, did the title company do the paperwork for you or did you hire a real estate attorney? How did that work?
Okay, great question. I just do an addendum and I specify the terms of the financing and then I take that to the title company and they actually do the actual legal documents.
Coming up on the Rental Income Podcast.
Christian does a really good job of screening his tenants and he normally has very good tenants, but he recently had a tenant go bad. So I want to talk to him about what happened, what these tenants looked like when they applied and see if we can find any red flags and maybe find something that we could avoid to make sure that we don't get bad tenants in the future. Before we get into that, I want to take a moment and thank our sponsor today. It's Rentler. If you're looking for the ultimate online resource to help you better manage your rental properties, you should really check out Rentler. They really have everything that you need to help you manage your rental properties better. They have all the forms that you're going to need. For example, they have leases that are specific to every state. They have pet addendums that you can use, move in, move out checklists. They have the lead-based paint disclosure form. And if you own a property that was built before 1978, you've got to provide this form to your tenants. It's a federal law that every house before 1978, you have to provide this form. They have applications. You can do tenant screenings. You can take online payments. I mean, literally everything that you're going to need to do as a landlord, they have for you right there in one easy portal. They have a special offer just for the listeners of the Rental Income Podcast. If you go to tryrentler.com/info, you can download the fair housing laws for all 50 states. They're all a little bit different in every state, and you want to make sure you're familiar with the laws for the states where your rental properties are. And if you just go to tryrentler.com/info, you can instantly download that report. Again, that's tryrentler, tryrentler.com/info. All right, let's get back to the show. So, Christian, before we talk about your tenant that went bad, why don't you tell me the criteria that you're looking at when someone applies to live in one of your rentals?
Okay, great question. So what I do, just like most people would, most landlords would do, I would do a background check and a credit check, okay? I wouldn't probably accept somebody with a recent eviction in the past 2 years. Or really, if there's an eviction there, I probably will pass that application. I would look that there's no collections or any type of bankruptcy in the past, I would say, 5 years. And, criminal activity.
Mm-hmm. Are you checking criminal, too?
Yes, okay. Correct. So I stay away if they've committed any crime. That's definitely, okay. I pass those applications.
And then income, I mean, I guess most people are doing three times the income.
Yes.
Is that what you're doing?
In my marketplace, I do three times the income. That's correct.
So if the rent is $1,000 a month, the tenant needs to make at least $3,000 a month.
Yes.
So you've got kind of your written criteria, but mm-hmm. you want to meet the tenants and you want to kind of see what kind of person they are too, right? That's a big part of your screen.
Yes, that's correct. So if I had three applicants that had very similar characteristics and I'm okay with three of them, I mean, in paper. So I would like to meet them three and see, I listen to my gut feeling after that. So yes, I do that.
Okay. So you meet with them. And so for this property that went bad, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How did your tenants appear on paper? Did they meet all your qualifications?
They met all the qualifications.
Okay.
I would say the only thing that they didn't meet is that they didn't provide a previous landlord. And, you know, that would be one of the things that I knew I took a risk on taking them in.
So that to me would be a huge red flag. So what was their situation? Like, why did they tell you they couldn't provide you a prior landlord?
Okay. So they were absolutely honest. I mean, when I met them, my gut feeling was, I mean, I felt that they felt vulnerable. Like, they really told me the truth. And they say, Christian, you know, we are here working. We make, you know, decent, which is, it was a little more than three times the rent, both of them. Mm-hmm. And he said, we have been living on our van for the past couple months because we are trying to get on our feet. And I know it's a risk, but we would appreciate if you give us an opportunity, you know, and I looked, they basically had all the requirements with the check. I mean, everything was fine except that, right? There's no past landlord record that I could call and get an update on regards to how they did. So yes,
they had
a
job.
I was willing to take.
They had a job, but they were basically homeless. I mean, living out of their van.
Pretty much,
right.
Yes.
Now, what
and
about
people probably are like? Yeah, go ahead.
What about before that? Like, did you inquire about, like, you know, you haven't been living in your van your whole life. Like, were you renting before that? Did you check in any further?
Yes. So it was, they lived with family members.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yes. So it was a red flag. I mean, I took a risk. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Okay. So with their income checked out, and then you had a good feeling about them when you met them personally.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Sometimes honesty, ingenuity. I mean, I felt that they were telling the truth, and they made the money. So financially, I knew that the rent, at least in the near future, I wouldn't see a problem. They gave me $1,000 for a deposit and $750, so close to $2,000. So I was pretty, you know, covered there.
So
again, remember, I made some repairs. So at the time it was winter. So I took a risk, calculated risk.
Okay. So it was $1,000 security deposit and then $750 mm-hmm. for the first month's rent. Now, the thing is, all right. So this was in the winter. This was, you know, what, 7 or 8 months ago?
Yes.
Like, okay. So So it was in the winter. So as a landlord, you're feeling the pressure that this is a tough time to rent the property. And I've got these tenants here that maybe aren't 100%, but you had a good feeling about them. They had a good job. They could afford the rent. They had the money that you needed to move in. So I think you took a risk that I think a lot of people would take, that, you know, these people maybe aren't 100% perfect, but you don't want the property to sit there vacant through the winter. So you decided to take it.
That's correct. And I would say first 5 months were beautiful. They communicated, pay on time, the first, if not earlier. But then after the first, the sixth and the seventh month, they were a little late. And, you know, sometimes it happens, right? I mean, the tenants have a life and XYZ reason. They started to pay late. I talked to them and, you know, it didn't work out at the end, but the first 5 months were perfect.
What were they telling you, like, that first month that they were late? What was their excuse?
Okay. So they were saying about relocation, right? That he was working 35 minutes farther.
Okay.
And again, their van spends a lot of gas and it's just a lot of reasons, but that was the main reason then.
Okay. So they got behind that first month. Did they eventually get the rent paid?
They did. They struggled for 2 months.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then after that, what happened? They just stopped paying or did they leave? Or what happened?
Yes, that's a great question. After that, I basically approached him and I said, you know, hey, are you going to be able to make the payments? I mean, you're struggling. I mean, if you need to downsize or find somewhere else, I mean, I just basically told them, can you pay the monthly rent or are you planning on moving out or you think you can't afford it? And I mean, I was honest with him and he was honest with me. And he said, Christian, we're going to be moving out by the end of this weekend. Right.
Okay.
So he told me that I think it was the 7th of that month. And I said, OK. And we agreed that he was going to pay me half the month.
Okay.
Which was about $400, a little over half a month. So anyways, yes, they ended up leaving that weekend.
Now, going forward, like, let's talk about what you've learned, if anything, from this experience. Like, I feel like not having a landlord reference would be something that would really kind of make me pause before I rent it to somebody. Like going forward, is that something that you would look at, or do you think if you were in this situation again with the exact same criteria that you would you would rent to someone without a landlord reference?
Absolutely not. I think although looking back, I took a calculated risk and I knew that back then I wouldn't do the same. Unless it was a very similar situation.
Okay.
But if I can wait longer, I would absolutely look for someone else,
maybe
2 weeks more and see what it goes.
Is there anything else you can think of that you would do differently? Or do you think this was just bad luck?
No, I don't think it's bad luck, Dan. I think the biggest thing is looking at the past track record of the tenant.
Okay.
And in this case, it's not that I failed to do. I chose not to do it.
Yeah.
Because I took a calculated
risk. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as getting the property back, did they do any damage to the property when they left, or did it just need to be cleaned up?
Okay. They actually left 80% of their stuff, and there was a little bit of a roach issue and I mean, just basically cleaning up, but I was able to get $400 from him. We communicated respectfully until the end. And then right now it's clear, it's clean and it's ready to be rented.
So did the security deposit take care of the cleanup and whatever else you had to do?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
There was no major damage.
Okay, perfect. Awesome. Well, I think this worked out good, and I think the silver lining to this whole thing is that now we're in the summer, and it's a much better time to find another tenant. So you've got the place showing now, and you're looking for a new tenant?
That's correct.
Awesome.
Yes,
awesome. That's great. Well, Christian, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate your time. If anyone wants to look you up, reach out to you, what's the best way for someone to contact you?
Okay. Well, they can certainly follow me on Facebook. If you do invest in Maryland, you can go on Facebook and put Christian Humanity, the investor's agent. Or if you have any questions on seller financing, you can absolutely email me at myloyalagent@gmail.com. I would love to help anybody that wants help.
If you missed that, I'll go ahead and put links to everything on the website. You can look it up at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode175. Christian, thank you so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it. And thank you for listening. We'll be back with a new episode next Tuesday. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new Caramel Chocolate Cold Brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.